The head trauma-related brain disease, CTE, can be fatal. Chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or CTE, likely comes from repeated head injuries where nerve cells in the brain degrade over time. The disease has made headlines over the years as it affects football players and other athletes in high-impact sports. New research published in the health journal The BMJ now suggests at least one quarter of all NFL players could get the disease in their lifetimes. Research into head trauma and its connections to dementia later in life have roots here in Wisconsin. Our next guest has been a co-investigator on a number of studies into the connections between traumatic brain injuries and their chronic effects. Dr. Benjamin Brett is a clinical neuropsychologist and associate professor of neurosurgery at the Medical College of Wisconsin. He spoke with WPR's Brady Carlson.
To start, what's your main reaction to this five-year study confirming CTE in one out of four of the NFL players who died during the period of the study?
Yeah, my main reaction is one of surprise, probably similar to the general public. I think, you know, there's an important number of limitations and caveats that should be considered when interpreting the main headline of the story. But I do think it's an important finding and step forward towards understanding the rate and prevalence of CTE, neuropathological change, in former football players and contact sport athletes in general.
When you're talking about caveats, what comes to mind for you?
It's important. There's a couple things when reading the results of the study to keep in mind as you interpret the results and try to apply them to different populations across levels of play or different sports. And the first thing to consider when reading through the results of the study is the need to separate the pathology from the clinical symptoms and the syndromes. So CTE, neuropathological change, is the presence of a neuropathology on autopsy. It's a contributor to brain disease, or is a brain disease that contributes to neurodegeneration. But that is different from many clinical signs and symptoms and even diagnoses of dementia. And it's important to not equate the two, that having the presence of this pathology means definitive diagnosis of dementia or cognitive impairment or psychiatric diagnoses.
So essentially, there's a range of people who can be diagnosed and confirmed as having CTE. It doesn't necessarily mean that every single one of them spends a portion of their life dealing with dementia or some of these worst case, these really severe cases that we sometimes hear about.
Absolutely. And even in the results from the study, you see that people with stage 3 CTE on autopsy have a neurodegenerative diagnosis or a diagnosis of dementia anywhere from 18 to 50%. So that's stage 3 CTE. That's a relatively advanced progression of the neuropathological change. And even those with that stage and level of progression, there's still a ton of variation in terms of who is experiencing cognitive impairment and decline from a functional standpoint.
But with a headline like this, which also notes that 25% of players may be the floor, not the ceiling, for CTE, does that then start the phones ringing in offices like yours, players or former players calling up and saying, what does this actually mean for me?
Of course. It's a totally normal reaction to, when you read a headline like this, to be concerned about either, you know, if you're a parent with a child in contact sport athletes currently, or you yourself are an aging adult who played high school football or lacrosse or any other sport, to be concerned that if 25% of this neuropathological change is the floor, you know, how is this going to affect me? What's my risk for dementia later on in life? So, of course, it's a totally natural reaction to be concerned about that. I think an important distinction from this study as it relates to Wisconsinites and just former athletes in general is the idea that we don't know how much these findings of this study translates or generalizes to other populations at lower levels of play. So the focus of this study is on the prevalence of CTE neuropathology. And what is the prevalence of former NFL players as it translates to former high school football players who, you know, played a couple years of youth football and maybe high school football? We don't know the prevalence of neuropathology in that group. So you don't want to take the findings from this study and say, well, 25% of everybody who played football at all levels is the floor, if that makes sense.
Does a study like this potentially complicate your job? What I mean by that is we have now an understanding that this may be very, very prevalent among certain types of players, but we still also don't have a way to test for CTE until after a person has passed away. And in the meantime, you have people who have a range of different symptoms, which may or may not be related to their football playing. And healthcare practitioners have to try to figure out what to do with that information and how to help treat the people in front of them.
Yes, absolutely. And in one way, it's more complicated than ever, to your point, because there's these findings that are published and people who are alarmed and worried and are experiencing symptoms. And so because we don't have a biomarker or a diagnostic marker of the prevalence of this pathology while people are living, although we're working on that now as part of our work at MCW, in some ways, it's more complicated than ever because of that. But in other ways, it is relatively simple in the sense of if somebody's experiencing a symptom, it's a process of rule out or exclusion of other possible causes for that. That's something that we have learned in a lot of the research that we've conducted in older former athletes, whether NFL players or other contact sports, that we have found that a lot of times symptoms that people are experiencing, and even clinically, they can be due to a whole host of other factors other than their contact sport participation. And so we see things like reversible causes of dementia that can be detected with regular diagnostics and blood tests, things like metabolic disturbances, thyroid levels being off, B12. We see clinically people who are having cognitive difficulties, and typically that could be due to things like obstructive sleep apnea being undiagnosed and untreated. And we see often that people who, just because they played football or played some other contact sport, they're experiencing symptoms. When they come in and get an evaluation and we find here are some other things, some etiologies that could be causing that, and we treat that, people can often get better. And so in some ways, it's more complicated to your point, but in other ways, it's simple of detect the symptom, kind of figure out what's going on, and then try to address it through the multiple other measures that we have to address it with.
We're talking about new research that confirmed over a 5-year period, at least 1/4 of NFL athletes studied had the brain disease CTE. We're with Dr. Benjamin Brett, clinical neuropsychologist and associate professor of neurosurgery at the Medical College of Wisconsin. The lead author of this new study said that we know the source of the risk is the cumulative effect of hit after hit after hit. And he said, in a way, the silver lining here is that it means we can control the risk, for example, by limiting hits during practices. But is there always going to be a risk of head trauma and by extension CTE as long as players are delivering those big hits to each other during NFL games?
I think there's a couple things to think about in response to that risk and the source of the risk. And one is there's a lot of work being done right now. Some work that was done here as part of the CARE Consortium. We're a leader in a multi-site collegiate athlete study. And results from that found, for example, that the grand majority of repetitive head impacts that occur in a college season, especially during football, occur in the preseason during those kind of 2-a-day early preseason practices. And so as a result of that finding, there were some policy changes that were implemented that reduced the number of head impact changes to practice schedules and things like that. And so in one way, there are opportunities to reduce those repetitive head impacts through research and identification of not just time of the season, but position, personality types. There's all sorts of things that can result in repetitive head impacts, like tackling techniques, et cetera, that can be addressed through a prevention perspective. In addition to that, I would also say that it does need to be a cost-benefit analysis between some risk and benefit of contact sport participation. And so, what is the degree of risk from contact sport participation for neurodegenerative diseases, and what level of contribution does that have for your risk of dementia later in life? And trying to weigh that on many of the benefits of contact sport participation, where, in a world today where childhood obesity and lack of physical activity is extremely high. Social isolation, you know, compared to playing on contact sport teams, you know, sports with friends and having that social component, there is an element of, you know, there is some risk in everything that we do in life. And so trying to understand, one, what is that risk? How big of a contribution of that exposure relates to adverse long-term outcomes? And then what is that risk relative to the potential benefits of that thing?
A moment ago, you were saying that there are things people can do right now that minimize the risks even after they've experienced head trauma. Say you've got a player in front of you who maybe is experiencing some of the symptoms that we associate with CTE. What do you have them try to see if that might help them address what they're dealing with?
A thorough evaluation really is an important part of that. Like the other diagnostics that rule out other conditions that I mentioned earlier, like reversible causes of dementia, or, you know, kind of even treating depression with therapy or antidepressants, SSRIs or other things. But that is sort of addressing more of the immediate symptoms or kind of ruling out other things that could be causing difficulties that people are having. But another thing that I often address with people who come in clinically who are worried about their risk for dementia because they participated in a contact sport and read the headline is what we call modifiable health and lifestyle factors. And a lot of the research that I do here at the Medical College of Wisconsin is focused on this from a dementia perspective. We know there are a whole host of health and lifestyle factors not related to head injury history that can reduce an individual's risk of dementia independent of things like genetics and things like that. And so these are things like cardiovascular risk factors, sleep, even hearing loss, social isolation, depression. These are all things that we know can reduce your risk of dementia, whether you've had a history of head injury or not.
Of course, we're talking as the NFL is getting underway again. College football season is here. What would you like not only players and medical practitioners, but viewers and fans thinking about when it comes to CTE and the toll that these very popular games are potentially taking on the people who play them?
I think one of the most important things to consider is the incredible advancements in the detection methods, the return to play protocol progressions, and the player safety that has been identified and implemented over many years. And so what we call the modern clinical care model, where detection and diagnosis of concussion is better than ever, and people are able to be removed from sport as quickly as possible following an injury. And then they undergo what we call a gradual return to play progression, where they are guided through a gradual improvement and increase in physical activity and sport participation. And by the time they're ready to return to sport, they have fully recovered, and there's a reduction of repeat concussion later on. And so all of these advancements that we've made toward player health and safety and how we kind of handle and diagnose and manage concussion and return to play is really important when thinking about the modern game and everybody kind of playing in today's time.
Dr. Brev, thanks so much for talking with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Dr. Benjamin Brett is a clinical neuropsychologist and an associate professor of neurosurgery at the Medical College of Wisconsin. He talked to Brady Carlson about new data suggesting that traumatic brain injury disease, CTE, will affect at least a quarter of NFL athletes.